Engineering management can be a lonely place. Welcome to Managers Club, where you'll find interviews with top engineering leaders and managers to help and inspire you. Listen to the real-life stories of successful and ambitious engineering leaders who are focused to lead their teams to bigger and better outcomes. This is Managers Club.
Hey, good afternoon. Today I have with me my friend Yanni, who's a senior director of data science at Walmart. Welcome, Yanni, to Managers Club.
Hey, Vidal. How's it going?
Good, man. Thanks for coming on.
Good to be here.
Tell people a little bit about your background and how did you get into management?
Yeah, I, as many people in the field, I was an individual contributor and then transitioned through my technical expertise to be a tech lead. And then the right opportunity arose with one of my mentors. He did see on me some qualities around people management. With the right guidance from him, I was able to transition from purely being a technical leader to being somebody who could also manage people and have the ability to mentor them and then guide them to the right career path. But yeah, I was very grateful for my mentor.
That's awesome. What are the biggest challenges you face now as an engineering leader?
At the group that I am right now, one of the mandates that we have is to try to build horizontal services. So I'm part of Walmart International, and we work like with four international markets, and they want us to really build leverageable services and data science models. So one of the biggest challenges is to obviously connect with each of the markets, sit down, understand what the needs are, be part of the roadmap conversation, and then try to collect all that information and then guide the team. I'm also playing the role of a product leader, try to guide the team through what is the common denominator that we should be building to fulfill the data science need of the markets. So I would say that's the biggest challenge. We try to typically find the common elements of our data science models, and that's about 70% are common, like on an e-commerce side, 70% I would say are common. But then the rest of the 30%, we try to cater to the individual needs of each of the markets. And some of the markets are predominantly urban, such as Mexico and the UK. Some other markets are like a mix of urban and suburban, and some other ones are very similar to the US. That's part of our main challenge.
Interesting. Could you share with us a lesson you've learned as an engineering leader?
I think in this age, we know that things are moving so fast. It is impossible as a leader to manage in any top-down way. It's impossible to know everything that is happening. So the biggest lesson that I learned is to cultivate psychological safety. What I mean by that is create an environment where everybody on the team could have a voice to express their opinion and then be able to contribute technically with ideas or like ideas that could either be, you know, product ideas or data science ideas or like things that we could improve on the product. But that, and that's how I realized that's the only way that the team can scale. So like at least, like, you know, so in a lot of cases, I pose questions to the team about how we can address a problem. And then I really rely on them because they have a psychological safety. They feel empowered to express an opinion, to have a conversation. And then eventually collectively we like align or converge towards the right solution. But I found it like very important for the person on the team to not be afraid to express their opinion. And that's for me the biggest thing that I'm trying to cultivate. And of course, during the pandemic, I have to say empathy is another thing that like every leader should demonstrate, like at least understanding, you know, the individual needs of each person on the team. Some of them had families, some of them couldn't have families. Some of them are like introverts, some of them are extroverts. Some of them could deal with the pandemic in a different way. Try to create opportunities for like everybody to get together was one challenge. But the other one is how you create an environment for each one of them to be continue to thrive, have a really good mental health, because like it was really challenging for some of those people. But then you just continue to have a cohesive team as we, you know, continue to meet some of the higher demand that our websites were facing during the pandemic.
These are both really good things. Could I just ask a little more? Absolutely. You say you pose questions to the team. Do you do anything else to promote psychological safety? It's such an important concept.
One thing that we started doing over the last couple of years is to, one of the challenges of data science is its unpredictability. So at least when you try to plan, I would say some of the aspects of software engineering are much more predictable comparing to data science, that there is a lot of experimentation that is happening. So in a lot of cases, we as data scientists, when we try to deliver something into production, we try to not be the bottleneck. So when we do the roadmap planning, we always try to allocate our capacity at around 70 to 75%. So this is what we're trying to do. And the rest of the 25%, it's either things that the team feels compelled to experiment on, or that we really want to start an item that is going to be coming up in the next quarter to start experimenting with that if we feel that it's challenging. That comes through the research, with the experimentation. So I feel that's another area that you could actually cultivate the psychological safety, is like through promoting the culture of experimentation and being data-driven. So to allow them to try different things, and then also allow a culture of failure. And then I don't call it failure typically, I call it learnings. So at least they can know, what can we learn? So we celebrate our successes, we celebrate our failures, but regardless on those, what did we learn? And then how can we build on those learnings? At least that's another thing that we're trying to do, at least try to push them to learn new things. And especially like most of them have a growth mindset. They read papers. They want to build like different techniques. So like at least, and in some cases, you need to allocate some time for that. So at least that's one of the things that we do.
That's really interesting. So you're describing that there's more unpredictability in data science. And so you allow more buffer time. It sounds like more time for doing spikes and research. So that's very interesting. And then one other thing you mentioned during the pandemic, like trying to give people like mental health and empathy, is there anything that you have found like really successful for that with your team?
Yeah. So the group that I'm part of, which is the Walmart International Group, we've instituted Wednesday afternoons, there were no meetings. And then everybody was really trying to observe that. And we also instituted, because we work a lot with international markets, and also we have an offshore team in Bangalore, we instituted for people to have a better work-life balance, strict hours where we cannot have meetings. So for example, after 4 p.m. Pacific time, you were not allowed to have any meeting. Unless it was something really urgent, everybody had to agree. So that's some of the things. And then we started it experimentally for like the first 3 months, and then people really enjoyed it. So we continue having those even at the moment that we speak right now. And then everybody observes them. Everybody is really respectful of those things. And the other thing that we did is we also, at least like the leadership, created a campaign called It's Okay. And that meant that it's okay for us to decline a meeting. It's okay for us to move a meeting because we got to spend time with the family. So at least create those avenues or create the safeness so people could start have more of a work-life balance, because that was the biggest challenge. People were not prepared for that. Like absolutely, like either with the kids at home or they didn't have the right setup. So that was the biggest challenge for me. You know, like eventually right now they've adjusted, but at least in the early days, there wasn't much of life and work balance.
I think that's really great. Thanks for sharing about the It's Okay program. That sounds really good. Let's moving on to hiring. What is your approach to like hiring and recruiting, especially these days?
I would say, obviously, we have always, it depends. For me, the hiring and recruiting depends at the stage that the team is at. Like at least right now, the team has grown and we're at a stage where we have built the right foundation so we can start bringing in younger team members or more inexperienced team members, either through our internship program or to have like only a couple of years of experience. As you probably know, since you're based in the Bay Area, there's huge competition with other technology companies. So in some cases, we have to find, if we want to keep growing the team, we have to find those young and smart people that could actually join the team. But the thing that we changed during the COVID recruiting time was like, we also tried to spread out, obviously, the interviews across different dates. So like at least right now, when we interview with somebody, at least on the virtual on-site, like typically those interviews happen over like the course of 2 or 3 days. And in some cases, it spans on a couple of weeks. Because it can be really overwhelming for a candidate to be on a video call for 4 or 5 hours straight. So at least that's something that we have changed. And then the other thing as a group that we're trying to push is like also try to push as much as we can diversity, not only in the data science group that we have, but also in the whole engineering group that we have. So in some cases, we ask our sourcers to try as much as I can to source diverse candidates. And then we try to review those first to at least try to increase diversity in the group. Those are some of the things that we are trying to do that. I'm very fortunate to have 3 or 4 key senior leaders on my team that at least are able to do mentorship. So at least it can allow us to be able to grow the team by bringing in new members, younger members, more inexperienced, but at least they're very talented.
I think that's really nice how you spread out the interviews, because you're right. Since they're virtual, you don't really have to do them all at once, like when someone's coming on site. That's a very interesting idea. Yanni, looking at your background, you've been a manager and a leader for a while, like probably more than 10 years, right?
Correct.
What would be your advice for managers who are just starting out?
Just be authentic. Just be real. Like at least really be authentic and empathetic. People really value and appreciate that. At least that's my biggest advice. Like, don't try to be somebody who you're not. Like just really try to be yourself. At least like that's the biggest advice that I give to somebody.
What is your workday like? How do you manage your time, emails, et cetera? I assume you must be very busy as a senior director.
Yeah, I typically, a lot of the early calls, like a lot of the first couple of hours of the day are conference calls with the UK and India to try to coordinate. So at least I can know if you see from Monday to Thursday, because at least Friday evening in India, then we don't have any meeting hours with them. So Monday to Thursday, the first 2 or 3 hours are meetings with offshore teams. Then at least I always try to keep a buffer for about 30 to 45 minutes to at least I can either go for a walk and or answer emails during that time. And then typically I also pick a day in the week, typically early, where I've tried to have my team meeting with my directs. And also at least try to have bi-weekly or tri-weekly meetings with other members of the team to see how they are and how they're doing. But I've also, during the busy time, I'm conducting more and more of my work on Slack because it's a lot more immediate. And at least if I don't have to, I try to avoid, try to resolve as much as we can decisions either over Slack or email and try to avoid meeting, like, you know, excessive meetings. Because in the beginning, there was just too much excessive meetings. And I think the Zoom fatigue is real. And then the last part is I try as much as I can to respond to all the emails by the end of the day or by the end of the next day. But at least I try to prioritize depending on by who it came or like what the urgency of the issue. But at least, you know, I'm really trying to be respectful of everybody's time and at least try to respond to the emails as quickly as I can. But yeah, a lot of the stuff that we're trying to do right now is through Slack.
Do you have any tips for managing Slack? Because things like Slack, you can get bombarded by lots of messages, lots of long threads to follow. I'm just curious, since you're moving more to Slack, do you have any tips or tricks there?
Yeah, first of all, if you have a group, try to avoid the ad here or the ad all, like at least, because at least, you know, those are, you could jump into that. But that's like at least, it's really easy to lose things. So at least, you know, try to use as much as you can the threads. But at least, you know, the conversation can be lost, at least if it's just one of your info things. So like, at least we're using a lot more of the threads right now. And yeah, those are the two major ones. And then I'm trying, and that's my personal tip, I'm trying to turn off my notifications on my phone on Slack. Because at least when I'm going out and going for a walk, or like at least I'm trying to decompress, I'm really trying to be present. So at least that's the other advice. I'm turning off my Slack notifications on my phone.
Okay.
That's not like a tip, but at least, like, you know, that's kind of like something, as I said, it can be very distracting. Like at least the early days, I was out on a walk and you're constantly getting bombarded and then it's really hard to be present. And obviously, you know, you need to escape a little bit so at least you'd be able to recharge.
No, I think that's good advice. Yeah, I turn off lots of notifications on my phone because otherwise your phone is going to always be going off with either a text message or Slack message or an email. It's kind of hard to focus with all that. What would you say is a personal habit that contributes or has contributed to your success?
I would say reading, two things. Number one, to the one topic that we were discussing before, trying to be empathetic and real as a leader. So that's the one part. And the other one is try as much as possible to keep up either directly by reading news, either like industry news or tech-based news. But also keep up with that by your team members pushing you some of that information. So in some cases, you know, you could find retail news or you could find papers that you read. But in some other cases, as I said, you can't find everything. But for me, a leader has to continue to be a master of its craft to some extent if they want to continue to be relevant. So you gotta be authentic, as I said, as a people's manager. But again, at least on your craft, you got to continue to be a master of your craft.
I think that's great. Yes. And I got to say, I mean, I worked with you and I think you always struck me as someone who's very authentic, very easygoing, very. So I think that's really great. Is there an internet resource, app or tool that you really like that you use at work, maybe besides Slack, that you find essential?
BR has always interesting management articles. So that's one source. And then the thing that I would advise people is that even on paper, even if on paper, you read an article and then you realize, oh, that doesn't apply to my domain. I think the biggest aha moments that I have found is that how can you take a lesson from one business segment and try to apply it into your own business segment. So this thing, HBR is a really good source. And then I typically, the other blog that I'm reading is like the Tech Meme blog. Tech Meme, like at least is always like interesting. They can like really do a really good job into filtering the right stories. Those are the two things that I always check.
All right, I'll have to check it out. On the topic of reading, if you could recommend one book to managers, what would it be and why?
I would recommend the book from Clayton Christensen, the How Would You Measure Your Life? Like the first couple of chapters made like a profound impression to me because it helped me understand what are the important things that make somebody happy at work. And then the most important thing is the people and the work that you're doing. In a lot of cases, people could complain about their perks or their parking or their benefits. But even if those were solved, when you go back home after a long day, it's the work and the people that you surround yourself with that are going to give you like the biggest satisfaction. So at least, you know, that's one of the things that I try to tell my team and also, you know, use it as my North Star in my career. You surround yourself with people that you enjoy working with and then always try to do things that you find interesting and or you find impactful.
That sounds good. I'll have to check out that book. I don't think I've read it. What is your approach to developing the members of your team, people who report to you?
Listen to them, and especially two things. Number one, try to get to know them as people as much as possible. Like at least in some cases on our one-on-one, we'll talk about the weekend. If they want to open up, how was the weekend? What are some of the hobbies? Like at least I know each person on my team what their hobby is. So this thing, try to get them to know as people. That's the first one. And the second one is listen where they want to go into their careers. And at least, you know, try to help them on that. I think one of the biggest mistakes that I've seen is that in some cases, people think that if you become a tech leader, the only path after that is going to be people manager. I think that's the biggest fallacy that I've seen. Not everybody that could be a tech leader can also be a people manager or vice versa. So at least don't apply any pressure to them and see whether they want to continue to be the master of the craft, being an individual contributor or a tech lead, or whether they want to move into that. And then when we decide that, how can I help them to get into that path? And then helping can be resources, connecting them with other mentors that can help them on that path, or expose them to the right audience in some cases to either give presentations or give them the right opportunities to lead a team or to be able to showcase their talent. But at least, you know, those two things, people appreciate that. Like at least, as I said, if you're authentic and you listen and you help them get to their goals, I think that it gets you like really far.
I think that's great. And yeah, it's like a totally different job too. One more question. So we talked a lot about your refining your craft and also being authentic and listening. What does it take to be a great engineering leader in your mind? Is it to do that? Or is there something else you would say it takes to be a great engineering leader?
Look, at the end of the day, one important thing, Vidal, I would say to answer your question, the last part is also, and I know you're going to have a follow-up question on me. The last part would be to inspire. So at least, you know, inspire the team towards excellence in whatever way that's defined. Like at least each of the engineering groups or the data science group they have, especially with the advancement of OKRs right now, everybody's trying to, you know, define their own operational excellence or engineering excellence. But at least, you know, for me, the key is how do you inspire your team through your work, your actions, through the environment that you create to be able to thrive and reach those goals. For me, people have to be inspired by a good leader. Now, how do you do that? Like at least words are not enough. Actions are important too. So you got to really follow through on what you're saying. And then when people see that, like one example that I'm going to tell you is that there's two examples. The one thing is that if somebody goes on vacation, we never contact them. That's like at least let them enjoy the time off. And if there's something bad is happening, then we'll deal with that. And then like if something really bad happens, then it's on me because I didn't create the right succession story. I didn't create the right knowledge transfer for people to do that. That's a learning. But at least, you know, let people have the time off or no emails over the weekend. It's easier said than done, but like I use a feature right now in Outlook. So if I work over the weekend, there's like something that says send later. So if I work over the weekend, I use that. Like at least when the people on the team will get that email from you, they feel compelled to reply. No, just let them be in, especially at that time. But I think follow through on what you say, and then, you know, inspire your team members. Those are like two simple examples, but at least when people see that, he really means what he says.
I think that's a great way to end this. Yeah, you have to inspire people, right? Because you can just manage, but to be a leader, you need to inspire as well, which is what you're describing. Yanni, this has been really great. I really appreciate you coming on today. You've been very generous with your time. Where can people go to learn more about you if they want to connect with you?
LinkedIn. What else?
All right.
I actually wrote a couple of data science blogs that I'm going to publish. So at least, you know, I'll put them on my LinkedIn page. It's mostly, the one is, how do you educate people about data science? And then the other one is, what are some tips to have the data science leader interact with other functions such as engineering or UX design or project managers, right? So at least, you know, that's some of the learnings that we got here on the group. So I think people would find that useful. So like, I will put those on my LinkedIn page.
Awesome. I look forward to checking them out. So again, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to see you, my friend.
Yeah, thank you, Vidal. I appreciate your time as well, and very interesting questions.
You got it. This is Vidal Graupera. I hope you found this interview valuable. I created Managers Club to help and inspire engineering leaders like you. If you like this interview, please visit the managersclub.com website and subscribe to the newsletter. At managersclub.com, you'll find additional resources, including several books on engineering leadership. We also have a LinkedIn group where you can discuss and connect with other engineering leaders. And finally, subscribe to this podcast on iTunes so you never miss an episode. See you next time.